I would have to get my ass kicked for another 2 years and then go to treatment and then get my ass kicked another 6 months, you know, before I finally realized, like, I clearly, without a doubt, have no idea what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I have no idea how to do this by myself. Like, that's the thing is, like, I think that's the habit that we get into, or the mode that we get into, is like, I can do this. I'm just not trying hard.
Yeah.
I'm just not trying hard enough. Like, if I actually try, I should be able to do this. But the problem is, like, you know, I don't want to, but then I do want to, but then I don't want to, you know?
Yeah. I should be able to.
Yeah. I mean, I should be able to, like, nothing's ever, I've always been able to just stop doing things, you know, like, why should this be any different? You know? And I think that's the point that I had to get to. That was the large chunk for me to swallow, was this idea that, dude, you may not be able to do this by yourself. Like, it seems like, Cameron, every time that you try to quit this, you fail. And it seems like every idea that you have in regards to how to do this and not fuck up, how to do this and still have money, how to do this and still have relationships, doesn't seem to work out. So clearly, you know, I'm sitting in rehab for the second time. Clearly, Cameron, maybe you don't know what you think you do about this stuff.
My name's Willie. The angst and discomfort of my childhood led me to a life of drugs, alcohol, and crime. Today, I work hard to stay sober, to know myself well, and connect with a power greater than myself that I have historically struggled to understand.
I'm Cameron. Curveballs that life had thrown me had me seeking relief through substances. Today, I'm learning that sobriety is just the beginning. Self-love is a learned behavior, and that we never stop surrendering.
Listen to the stories of those who have been where you're at.
Our desire is that you'll hear something that will give you hope and help you to see that on the other side of pain is joy.
And on the other side of hell is peace.
Hey everybody, what's up? I am Cameron.
And I'm Willie.
Welcome to the Other Side of Hell podcast. What's up, man?
Cameron.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Back for another show.
Thank you for inviting me back.
Crushing it in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
How you feeling today?
We'll get into it. I've been going through some stuff.
Right. You always want to talk. You always want to tell people your shit.
I need to get it off my chest.
It's great. Great, yeah, man. I think it's important that we talk about this stuff.
Yeah, that's why we're here.
Yeah, I like it. Right off the bat, let's talk a little bit about our sponsors. Remember, everybody, today's show is brought to you by our sponsors. We hope that you'll support them because they support us.
Yeah.
Number one sponsor, BAM, is Brainwash Coffee. Did you have Brainwash Coffee?
I did.
Dude, I'm so excited for this Brainwash Coffee.
You got a couple new flavors.
Yeah, some stuff I've never tried before. It's going to be good.
Go check them out at brainwashcoffeeco.com.
Brainwash Coffee Co. They give back to the community, and that's why we love them. And plus, Billy's a hell of a guy.
He is.
We like that.
He is.
Good also, guy.
Stay stopped.
Jackson.
Recovery Apparel.
Dude, Jackson's been sending me some really cool mock-ups.
Yeah.
We got some exciting stuff in the works.
We get a lot of our stories from Jackson, too.
Yeah.
I've had several people that he's brought our way that have amazing stories on the show. So not just great recovery apparel, great recovery experiences, stories, people that have gotten sober thanks to him.
Yeah, every time I need to like feel good about what we do, I talk to Jackson.
Yeah.
He really lays it on thick. Yeah. But staystop.shop, where you can find some stuff there. Great stuff that happened in there.
Getting buff with Valor Fitness.
Oh, pump.
Valor Fitness.
I still have some Valor stuff that I think might fit me again.
So yeah, cool. You look great.
Thanks. Yeah, appreciate it.
Been losing that weight with Valor Fitness clothing.
Yep. It's all the clothing, you guys. Remember that. Remember that. Valor Fitness clothing. It is valorfitnessclothing.com, and they too, again, boots on the ground and give back to the recovery community.
We going out in the bushes.
It. Right, man.
Go back and check out the episode that we had.
Jim's story
on. Yeah. He's talking about where he came from, and he goes back in there and gives back to the community.
Yeah, we love that.
Yeah.
So important. All right. Well, dude, today's show, what do you think?
Yeah, Marsha. I love Marsha.
Marsha.
I'm very grateful to have her story. Yeah,
you've known her for a minute, right?
Yeah. Yes. She, her and my sister are really close, like recovery close type, you know, sponsorship type stuff. So
that's great.
Yeah.
I like how you're keeping her anonymity and also blowing it at the same time. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you getting that story. I appreciate that she, was able to talk with us, and we got a pretty good topic from it. I don't think we've ever talked about this one before, but I do think that it's a part of everybody's journey in recovery, which is a moment of clarity.
Yeah.
Now, Willie, why don't you explain to people who may not know, like what we mean when we say like a moment of clarity?
A moment of clarity. It's a realization that something may be different than what you thought it was. It's a stark truth change.
Right.
You know, change of perception, perspective. Yeah.
Well, and it's something that we hear in the recovery community. It's a quote from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, right?
Yeah.
We hear that Bill has a moment of clarity.
Yeah.
And so we often refer to it as maybe the beginning point of a lot of people's recovery journey. Mine included. She talks about hers. Hers kind of threw me off at first.
Yeah.
Because it's an interesting moment. But I think that's the thing, is like these moments can come out of nowhere, like for whatever reason, like something will happen to us that maybe has happened to us every day for the last, you know, year, 2 years, month, however long. And for whatever reason in that moment, it will hit us differently.
Oh.
And we just think, dude, what the fuck am I doing? Like, but I think it's important to talk about, dude. Like, cause it's
kind of fun to think about,
right? Like, I know I've had like so many, which is funny, and I think that's why it's important. Is like, just because we have that moment of clarity, like everybody has that moment of realization where it's like, I can't keep doing this.
Yeah,
like with as much as I would like to say that I was able to stop after that moment, like that's not the case, like it doesn't mean that, you know, like it wasn't the start of something.
Seems like that clarity, that moment is the starter.
Right.
To questioning your life to the point where it's time to start changing some shit. We hear about it a lot in abusive stories. You know, we've had some people on the show that talked about the domestic violence in their lives, and that's kind of the framing that they used. They had a moment of clarity where their abuser was doing the same thing they had been doing for a long time, and all of a sudden, you know, that day was different. They saw it from a different point, and they had a moment of clarity where, you know, a lot of times that leads them out of that bondage kind of thing, you know. And I'm thinking about some of your moments of clarity that you've shared that I'm grateful you had.
You know? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to remember with what you just said that these moments don't just apply to sobriety, right? Like, cause you talked about abuse and like, and that's the thing is like anytime that we're in a loop of negative behavior, and I'm guessing that, you know, one of the ones you're talking about is probably with me related to food. No. Oh, well, it just feels like that's what we've been talking about a lot recently.
But yeah, I mean, those are some. No, I was talking about your trip to the woods when you went up to the cabin.
Well, yes, that's a big one.
Yeah.
But the moment of clarity happened, you know, like it was the moment of clarity that led me to that trip.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm like, have I shared the whole shebang of that? Like, should I get into it? Like, here's the important part of that story. Like I was working a second job as a waiter at a restaurant. One of my best friends was the manager, you know, and I would go out to the parking lot on break and smoke a cigarette and also like take a couple swigs off the bottle in my truck, you know?
Yeah.
And then go back to work. And if I had any pills, of course I, you know, chew those pills, wash them down with, you know, a swig or two off the bottle and then go back to work, you know, like yeah. waiting tables.
As if nobody noticed.
Right. Yeah, no, it was very noticeable.
Yeah.
But like on this particular day, like it was like the day before payday or 2 days before payday. I can't remember, but I was broke. And I remember I had half a pill and my prescription wasn't going to come in for like another week or two. And I had no money to get anything is sort of the bottom line. Like, and I was out of ideas. I couldn't think of anything that I could do to get, you know, what I felt like I needed to get through the rest of the day. Like I couldn't fathom any method or anything that I could muster to make it happen, which, you know, as an addict, I'm pretty fucking industrious when I want to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I was out of ideas that day. And it just hit me, you know, I was like, dude, like this is crazy. Like I can't get through a shift of work, like without, you know, like got to change my way I am, like getting fucked up. Like I have to get fucked up just to get through work. And now I'm out of money and I'm not going to have any pills. And like, I'm, you know, I feel anxious inside, like I might die. Like what the fuck is going on? You know? Right. And it was that moment that I decided like, okay, dude, I've got to do something. I've got to do something. So I decided like right then and there, like, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go up to our family cabin in the middle of the woods where I can't be in contact with anybody that have any drugs. Like I'll just withdraw and I'll spend the weekend withdrawing and then I'll come back to work. And it happened to be a 3-day weekend, you know, and then I'll get it all out of my system, come back to work Tuesday and everything will be good, you know. Needless to say, that's not exactly how things went, but I did end up leaving work. So I went in there and I told my boss, I was like, listen, man, like I got to get out of here. This is not a good situation for me. I apologize. And I never went back to that job. But that was the start of something because it led me to a failed attempt to quit on my own, right? Like, which we hear about a lot.
Uh-huh.
And then, it led me to being open and honest with some relatives of mine that were clueless, had no idea what was going on. And it led me into sort of the very beginning stages of me acknowledging that there was a problem and beginning to take some sort of action towards help. So even though like things went the way that they did and I didn't get sober for another 2 years, that was still the start of something. That was still a moment. And I think that that's why it's important that, you know, like we talk about it, is so that people don't get discouraged if they have those moments and then they still find themselves, you know, using. But yeah, that, I mean, that was one for me. Like what comes to mind for you?
I think it's important. Like you talk about that with such ease and, you know, you speak about that really simply now, but that was painful. Like that was a deeply painful and emotional and scary situation. And you meant what you said, you know, like we suffer from alcoholism and I think, you know, we get these moments of clarity and we mean it. Like we're sincere. I'm going to go up in the woods and I'm going to kick and I'm going to be done. And right. I mean that, and we believe it and we mean it with all sincerity. And, it seems like those moments, you know, they mean something a lot deeper than what they may seem at the surface, because they last with us. You know, we don't like those moments of clarity that come like that, those decisions with absolute sincerity that tomorrow I'm not going to do the same thing. And I mean it, like I've had it with this. They build up into yet another moment of clarity. Like, you know, how many times did I get arrested and with absolute certainty know that I'm going to stay sober this time, right? And I mean it, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And after, you know, 4, 5, 6 times of that is what finally gets me to the point where, like you were talking about, you know, those were failed attempts to try to do it on my own. I could muster enough will on my own. And I think understanding that I can't do it on my own was a massive moment of clarity for me, that I am going to need some type of help. And I found it in jail. You know, my very first 12-step meeting that I ever went to was a board meeting. It was a panel meeting inside of a jail. And I remember going to that meeting to get out of my cell, and I had already had like a decision made about what I thought 12-step meetings were about. I already had a decision that AA meetings were a bunch of people that just went and whined about their problems, and they weren't really there to get any to change their lives in any way. And I got that decision based on somebody else's opinion of it. I had a friend tell me, and I was young, but I had a friend tell me that that's what happened at these meetings. You know, that people go there and they just whine about their problems. That's what he said. They fucking whiners. And
sure.
And I went, and that's not what happened to me. These people were talking with sincerity, and they were talking about the way that they used to use and drink, and I believed them, you know. And I realized at that time that everything I thought I knew was not necessarily the truth. It was different than what I thought. And that's a hard pill to swallow, right? I have a big ego that likes to believe that it's right all the time. And for me to realize and recognize that, you know, what I have bouncing around in my head isn't necessarily reality, it takes some time, you know. And it takes, you know, it's nice though. It's nice to get that change of perspective. And so it opened me up to being more willing to like go back when it was time. I didn't get sober for several years after that, but the feeling of truthfulness that those guys carried stayed with me all those years, even though maybe I forgot it in oblivion or whatever, whenever it was time for me to get sober again, whether it was through 3 days in jail or 30 days in jail or 6 months in jail, that place that the change of mind happened continued to pop up over and over and over again, where finally it did click to the point where I was able to get sober. And that's kind of a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. I think one important thing that you touched on is the fear, like the amount of fear that I had in that situation. Like, when, you know, I'm looking at everything, like all my options, everything that's available to me, and most likely like what the next 24 hours is going to look like for me, like the amount of fear that I had inside, you know, was enough to finally spur some action. I'm like, I can't keep doing this. Like, yeah. And what I came to realize at some point, now, it took me a long time to even get to this point where I realized, like you said, that everything that I was thinking or everything that I thought I knew was wrong.
Yeah.
And I would have, you know, from that one moment of clarity, I would have to get my ass kicked for another 2 years and then go to treatment and then get my ass kicked another 6 months, you know, before I finally realized, like, I clearly without a doubt have no idea what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I have no idea how to do this by myself. Like, that's the thing is, like, I think that that's the habit that we get into, or the mode that we get into, is like, I can do this. I'm just not trying hard enough. I'm just not trying hard enough. Like, if I actually try, I should be able to do this. But the problem is, like, you know, I don't want to, but then I do want to, but then I don't want to, you know?
Yeah. I should be able to.
Yeah. I mean, I should be able to, like, nothing's ever, I've always been able to just stop doing things, you know, like, why should this be any different, you know? And I think that that's the point that I had to get to. That was the large chunk for me to swallow, was this idea that, dude, you may not be able to do this by yourself. Like, it seems like, Cameron, every time that you try to quit this, you fail. And it seems like every idea that you have in regards to how to do this and not fuck up, how to do this and still have money, how to do this and still have relationships, doesn't seem to work out. So clearly, you know, I'm sitting in rehab for the second time. Clearly, Cameron, maybe you don't know what you think you do about this stuff. And I remember, you know, after a little bit more time in rehab and some clean time under me, finally I came to the conclusion, like, I am an alcoholic and I am an addict, and that is all that I know. That's it. Other than that, fucking, I am clueless. No idea. And that was actually a really liberating feeling, just to be like, I don't know. I know this one thing, and I know that because I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict, that means that if I want a successful life and if I want a sober life, there's going to be certain things that are required of me. And I know that. And if I want that old life, I know how to do that too. So other than that, I'm a blank slate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was good.
Yeah. You mentioned coming to realize that you're an alcoholic. And I think, you know, what does that mean? Right. Like, I think about, how did I come to the conclusion that, you know, other than always getting in trouble, like, what were some of the things that made me realize that alcoholism is real, I guess, right? Like, that I am bodily and mentally different than other people when it comes to the way that I put chemicals into my body, right? And that was another realization for me when I heard the definition of alcoholism and the alcoholic and what the opinion about that is, right? And so for me, a really liberating thing, a really great understanding for me, was that I'm not bad. I'm not a bad person. I did bad things. I will admit that. I did some things that were definitely immoral, definitely stepped on the toes of my fellows. I hurt a lot of people in pursuit of trying to manage and prove that I am going to be able to use and drink successfully someday. I hurt a lot of people, but I'm not bad. And that was a great relief for me to understand that I'm sick. And what I mean by that is, when I drink and I use, something happens inside of my body that creates an obsession that I am completely powerless over. That was a great realization for me. It took a lot to get there. You know, we talked about it being a slow burn, right? We talked about it being something that some of these moments of clarity are very slow in the process of coming to understand. Like, they take a long period of time. Like, I could hear the same thing over and over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden one day it clicks, like, oh, what you're saying is, when I drink alcohol, there's a reaction in my body that changes the way that I see the world. And when I don't put alcohol into my body, that reaction doesn't just happen. It only happens when I put drugs or alcohol into my body. And if that's the case, then staying sober could be the answer for all the problems that I have in my life, right? That could be the beginning of that anyway. And that's what has come to be the reality in my life, that is, if I stay sober, I don't go back to jail. Like, I haven't been to jail since I stayed sober. Yeah. You know what I mean? You haven't been back to treatment since you started staying sober. I haven't lived a perfect life by any means, and I haven't not hurt people. You know, I've lied in sobriety. I've stolen in sobriety, especially early sobriety. There was a lot of behaviors that I brought into early sobriety with me, but some of the bigger ones went away when I stopped drinking. When I stopped using drugs, a lot of the bigger ones went away. You know, the cops kind of started leaving me alone. I had other shit to do. I wasn't quite as big an issue as I may have thought at one time. And having a solution for that, which we've talked about several times on the show, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to talk about the solution. We're here to continue to talk about the solution. You know, admitting that I'm an alcoholic and that because of my alcoholism, my life becomes completely unmanageable is something that I'm going to continue to talk about and I'm going to continue to work on, because it takes me, you know, one step further away from that hell that I came out of. Right. And it's a beautiful thing, man. You know, I think, you know, we have to ask ourselves, like, are these moments of clarity, are they gifts from God? Like, where do these things come from? Where all of a sudden, you know, like it's a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. I'm fucking drinking like I did last Saturday night. I wake up Sunday morning and all of a sudden my perception about my life has changed. Mm-hmm. Why this time? Why not 10 times before that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because, like, in my example, you know, that I shared earlier, that situation wasn't unique. It's not like I had never been in this situation where I didn't have pills, I didn't have alcohol, I didn't have money, and I didn't know what to do. Like, that situation wasn't unique. Like, just for whatever reason in that particular moment on that particular day, like, I was out of ideas. I couldn't comprehend anything. And whether that was like a gift from God or, you know, me somehow being in touch with like the divine energy within me, or that wants to align with the universe or whatever you want to call it, like, it was something profoundly different in that moment that allowed me to see clearly for the first time in a while that it couldn't continue this way. I mean, personally for me, I am so grateful for it that I don't really care where it came from. You know, like, whether it's God or whether it's a divine energy is really kind of irrelevant to me. For me, I'm just so damn grateful that we have these moments where we're able to see that if we continue to do what it is that we're doing, we're going to die.
Yeah.
And I think that for me personally, you know, I had a relative pass away. I know I've talked about it a couple of times, a very close cousin pass away. When I was sort of at the beginning stages of what I would call active and full-blown hardcore addiction, you know. And he passed away very young. He was 28. And when he passed away, I remember thinking, like, I get to go out now and live the life that he couldn't have, you know. There was a lot of fear and a lot of guilt and shame around my behavior towards him, you know, as he was dying, because he had pain pills. Yeah. And so there was obviously a lot of emotion around that situation. And when I would find myself doing these things that I found incomprehensible, like drinking at work, stealing from my mom or, you know, however many family members, selling things that were gifted to me, you know, driving drunk daily. Yeah. I mean, you name it, right? The guilt and shame that I would feel in those situations was just so multiplied by this fact that here I am, like, gifted this life. Like, we don't all get this, yeah. You know? And I saw that very clearly when, you know, he was taken away. I watched him suffer, like, literally suffer, you know, over the course of a year. And here I am just wasting my life, you know? And so that realization hit me so hard that it was like profound, you know, a profound moment where something had to change. And maybe it was God, yeah. You know, maybe it was him. I don't know. You know, I don't know, but I think that there is something within us all. And the Big Book talks about this too, you know, this fundamental belief in God, you know, inside every man, woman, and child. And whether it's a belief in God or, you know, a connection to our higher selves, I don't know that it's as important as what we're able to take away from that, you know? And, for me, I'm just so grateful that, you know, that today I don't have to live that way, you know, and it all kind of spurred from this one moment.
Yeah.
The catalyst, really. Yeah,
and I think you mentioned the word gratitude, you know, grateful. And I think that's what ultimately comes out of these things. So, you know, it's a journey of pain and then relief and then gratitude, you know, this realization, because I can see what you're talking about and feeling that shame, because there were certain motives when you would go see your cousin that were purely selfish, knowing that those were selfish and doing it anyway under the guise of this noble reason. And that's what we do as addicts and alcoholics trying to feed the beast. That's what we do. I go over to my mom's house, do a chore next to her purse so that I can steal $20 out of it. Right. I mask all of my intentions with this thing of goodness, you know, this bullshit motive. And then I get sober and I have to face that stuff. And when we get on the other side of it and we look back at the moments where these things happened, not of ourselves, right? Maybe it was him. Maybe it was God. Definitely didn't seem to be of myself, right? I couldn't muster up the needed power on my own, right? Or I would have done it the first time I stole from my fucking mom. Like, it didn't feel good. I continued to try to stuff that and stuff that and stuff that, get to the other side of it, find a solution for this stuff, and then find that place of gratitude where I'm so grateful that I don't have to live that way anymore. Mm. I don't have to live that way.
Right.
I had to live that way. I don't have to anymore. Right. I couldn't not live. Just couldn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, finding peace in all this stuff through what we did, which was work the 12 steps, go to a fellowship where other people are doing the same stuff that we are, trying to find a solution for their ism, working the steps, being able to make amends for these things, you know, build up a life that we're not willing to give up, you know, creates that place where we're put in a position to be able to give this stuff away to other people. We're able to listen to the moments of clarity that happen to other people's lives, and we're able to relate with those things, because I don't know why us, right? I've been listening to a lot of old time AA speakers and just trying to wrap my head around this idea of, like, people have been on this planet for however many thousands or millions of years. And in that time, there's always been alcoholism. And I think that along with alcoholism, always comes the selfish nature of this disease. Always comes this this need to feed that with an inability to stop it once the obsession kicks in. And all of a sudden we're at a place where that's no longer looked at as being morally wrong, but being mentally sick or physically sick because of the allergy that happens to it. And we get the solution for that. Mm-hmm. How many people have had moments of clarity without a solution? I have no idea.
Right.
Right. I know that, I did have a moment of clarity and was given a solution. And so, you know, yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate you saying thank you. That's an important thing. And I'll say thank you too. I'm not sure who I'm saying it to or, you know, right. or what to do with it, but I know that that's an appropriate thing for me to do is be thankful and be grateful.
Yeah.
And one thing that you touched on when we are in these moments and we get this idea that we're alcoholic or that things need to change, you know, it can be a long road, but I feel like in my own story, in my own experience, like there's different levels of acceptance, you know, somewhere along the way, like in treatment, you know, and this for the second time, you know, I was able to look at all these patterns of behavior and know that they were so out of character for who I was.
Yeah.
And I was able to, you know, say to myself, like, okay, like maybe the reason I'm doing these things isn't because I'm a bad person, like you talked about. Maybe it's because I am powerless over this, you know, and like the things that I'm hearing from counselors and people in AA is that it's not my fault and that it's okay. And that to me, I think was the next level of acceptance. Like I can accept the fact that I'm an alcoholic and that I'm an addict and that, you know, I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. And that when I put a drink or a drug into my system, I react in a way that's different from the other people that are around me.
Yeah.
You know, my whole life, all I ever wanted to do was feel like I fit in.
Yeah.
You know? And so, to be, you know, like just to see another reason why Cameron is so different, like, oh yeah, well, of course I'm an alcoholic and an addict because I'm fucking not like anybody else. I just have to be different, you know? But then to hear and believe, you know, like, and I think that's a big part of it, that it's okay. Like, yeah, all that stuff's true. You are different. You do have this disease. You did do all those things. It's not your fault. And it's okay. It was huge for me. It was just so big. Like I got to take that okayness with me into so many different avenues of my life, you know, and just really apply it to, oh, like maybe I'm not good at this sport. Maybe I'm not fucking Karl Malone. Well, that's okay. You know, instead of using that as another reason just to beat myself down, because that's Cameron's default. Cameron wants to hate himself for everything that he's not like everybody else in.
Shit that don't even matter.
Yeah, shit that don't even matter. Shit that makes me special, you know? Shit that makes us unique,
yeah.
You know? That's the stuff that Cameron wants to hate on himself for. And so to be able to kind of just be okay with all that, comfortable in my own skin, took a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it still takes a lot of work. I mean, still, you know, like it's actually
still good, working on it.
Good talking about it right now because I'm feeling some of that, you know, in my life today, you know. But it's huge. It's so huge. So, you know, whether it's the moment of clarity or whether it's the acceptance or whether it's the fact that everything's okay, you know, I want to just bundle all that stuff together. Tie it with a bow of gratitude.
Yeah.
Again. I'm just so grateful for it.
Very well said. Very well said. Yeah, no, I don't think there's anything that I could add to that.
Yeah.
You know, what you said, but I do know somebody that can add to it, and if you want to get into it.
We'll yeah, somebody that I think relates a lot to that, yeah. You know, like I heard a lot of that in her story. She's definitely somebody who doesn't want to give up what she has today.
Yeah.
Mentions
a few moments of clarity in her story.
Pretty great. I'm excited to share it with everybody. So
yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. Without further ado, here is Marsha's war story.
Hi, my name is Marsha and I am an alcoholic and an addict. I have found myself more comfortable in the meetings of AA. So most of the time I refer to my clean time as sobriety, but my story encompasses all. So I am nervous. I haven't done a meeting in a while. I grew up in Southern California in the San Fernando Valley on a place called Pacoima. And it's very much the barrio. I was raised by a divorced family. My mom and dad were divorced by the time that I was three. And I had a little sister that lived with me. And I had an older sister who lived with our grandparents, my mother's parents. My dad was a biker. And a biker in the barrio is pretty interesting. I was raised by a single father. And I had my grandparents very close. My grandparents, one is been in America since before, you know, when we were still colonies. And one was a migrant from Bulgaria. So I grew up with my grandparents very close. I actually probably consider my grandma like my mom. But I was raised with my dad. My dad was an alcoholic and an addict. My dad had a lot of his own demons that he fought to, and he got screwed over really, really bad by both my mom and a woman that he married very short term when he was in the military. So he did his biker thing, but he had these two little girls, and we were white little girls in a very, you know, not white neighborhood. And so, he protected us. So like he would disappear to the garage. He was a mechanic. He was always greasy, you know, and he would disappear to the garage. He'd come in, put us to bed, disappear to the garage again. Right. This is pretty much how I grew up very young, but I was over at my grandparents. So we went to school next to my grandparents. So we would get dropped off there in the morning. We'd go to school and we would come back to my grandparents. So I had this very normal life at my grandparents, and then I would come home to my dad's, and we had our life. Honestly, it wasn't even until I was older that I realized that there was something different about it. It was just the way we were. But my little sister was like perfect. She couldn't do any wrong, right? And I was always in trouble. My dad ruled with an iron fist. But at the same time, I'm at the point where I have grandchildren, you know, and my children have grown, and I know how difficult I was. Not only was I difficult, I was also the older one, and I was not capable of leading. I was the one like, let's go get in trouble. But at the same time, I was daddy's little girl. So I would go into the garage and get greasy just to get greasy. I would go get him his beers, you know, snag a sip. I was daddy's little tom girl. Like my older sister looked like Angelina Jolie and was so beautiful. My little sister was like a little fucking Care Bear and cute. And then there was me. So I instantly went to like the punk rock scene. Tomboy. I never wanted Barbies. I was pissed. I had sisters. So like I would tell my sister she could have my Christmas gifts and stuff. And then I would destroy them. Like I would chop off their heads, put them in like monster cars, run them over with skateboards. I mean, I kind of tormented her. Like, here's a gift. but let me destroy it, you know? And that's kind of how I was. So I understood why my dad was the way he was with me. The first time I ever remember coming across drugs, alcohol was always a part of my dad's house, always a part of our life. I'm not at my grandparents, but definitely at my house, was, I'm gonna show my age, was the DARE program, right? So we were at school and we're learning about the DARE program. And I go home and I go into my dad's room and I don't know what we were looking for. I think we might've been looking for like my dad's nudie magazines or something, because he was a single father, my whole life, a single father. Like there was a naked woman in my kitchen one time. That's the only time I've ever seen my dad with somebody. And he has a triple beam. So this is how old school it is. I don't know if how many people know what a triple beam is anymore, but there was a triple beam with a mound of white stuff on it, right? And I had just gone through DARE, just got my little certificate and stickers and all that good stuff. And I remember I threw it in the trash and I went into the kitchen after I threw it in the trash and I got scared. And I put something on it that resembled it. So I don't know if I put sugar or flour. I'm not too sure what I put on it, but I think DARE is right around fourth, fifth grade. He actually stopped talking to my uncle. There was a huge fight and he stopped talking to my uncle for several years about that. And I'm telling you now that I'm older, I'm talking like at least an ounce of dope. Like it was a whole lot of dope. And so at some point my grandparents retire and they move back to South Carolina where my grandfather is from. And my mom comes back in our life and tries to take me and my little sister from my dad by saying a lot of horrible, horrible things about him. And my older sister is with my mom by this point and they have moved to Michigan. So we go to foster care for a minute and then we end up with an aunt and uncle. And my dad loses everything. So my dad is my hero. My dad raised us girls the best he could as a single father, a young single father. He really did try to put us first. He kept us safe. Nothing bad ever happened to us. We really didn't even know that there was this life going on that, you know, we were really blind. It wasn't like we grew up one day. It's because it always took place outside in the garage, you know, and that we weren't allowed there. And, my dad broke, he lost his job. Everybody but his closest friends that knew us, she tried to say some really horrible stuff about him. And, in the end, my dad won. I'm 13 at this point and, I have not done anything but drink my dad's beers as I'm going to take one out to the thing and drink half of it, you know. Well, I don't even know if it was half of it, but I would chug some. My dad wins and the courts tell my sister that we can go where we want to, that we're old enough to pick. And so my sister wants to go live with my mom and her other sister. And I don't know how to live without my sister. You know, I've been tormenting her my whole life. What am I gonna do without tormenting her now? Do you know? And so I go with my sister to Michigan, reluctantly. So reluctantly, I don't like my mom. My mom was never there. By the time that this happens, I'm 13. My dad was her second husband and she got married four more times in that time span. And the only time we really saw her was when she found a new one and wanted to show us off. And we were never good enough then. You know, we got new clothes, clean you up, take a shower. Don't be the biker's rug rat, you know, and I was a rug rat and I was happy being a rug rat in a place full of cholos and cholas. I was happy being a rug rat. And I was very, very mean to her. Very, very mean to her. By this time, I'm already 6 foot tall. I'm brutal. And I found drinking. I found drinking there. My mom drank a lot. She smoked weed a lot. It was not hidden from us. She didn't go to a garage, you know? And so me and my sister started stealing her alcohol and going places. I had more freedom because remember my dad, he wasn't going to let us out of his sight. So we were sheltered in a sense. And then all of a sudden my mom's like, go free, you know, just don't be my hair. Plus I'm a really big dick. So she's like, just get the fuck out of the house, you know? And I start drinking and, you know, it wasn't 6 months before she sent me back to California to be with my dad. I resented her for that. But at the same time, as an adult looking back, what else could she do? She has a lot of her own mental issues. My mom had been in psych wards and my mom had a lot of issues that I wasn't aware of. I just felt abandoned by her. And when I went back and I saw my dad was really into drugs then because he had lost everything. And, you know, like every good 13-year-old, it's you, right? It's you. It's never me. I mean, at 13, who the fuck can say that it's me? I couldn't stand looking at my dad like that, but I ran away with the kind of idea that he's violent and he's this and he's that. And I kind of just added to my dad's shit show, you know, but I ran away at 13 and I never went home. I got picked up one time. They sent me home and, I left before morning. I ran out the window. But at 13, being a runaway in LA County, let me tell you, there's not a lot of things to do. You start to meet people. Not a lot of 13-year-olds are hanging out during school hours. You can't go to school anymore because you're a runaway. So you start hanging out with the bums and start meeting people you shouldn't hang out with. And at the time I thought I was cool. You know, I'm fucking on point here. But really they were just pieces of shit in their addiction and they were willing to party with anyone in their addiction. And we all know that story. And I remember the first time I smoked weed, someone had asked me like, have you done this before? I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'm cool. You know? No, I was like laid out. But from that point on, I probably smoked. I could not have weed. I remember the first time that I went out drinking. I was 14 and we went to Florentine Gardens in Hollywood. And it was the first time ever that I had control. Like I wasn't just taking my dad's beer. I wasn't in a controlled environment with my sister because I had my older sister in Michigan. So we were drinking in Michigan. But my older sister was like, no, you're not doing that. And she might have been thin and shorter than me, but that girl could wrestle the shit out of me. And I wasn't used to being in a position where you lose, you know? So, I lost my virginity that night. Don't remember, fell down concrete stairs. It was horrible. And I was 14 at a club for 21 and over. The first time I did meth, I was a healthy 14-year-old. And within 3 months, I maybe weighed 75 pounds. I don't know how to do anything in moderation, but I do have a lot of street smarts. By this point, I am hanging out with people twice my age. And they are showing me how to make money. They are showing me, you get this, you sell this, and you have this. When you want a drink, you go steal it from the store. Do you know? They are showing me the ropes. And before long, I am just sucked into that world. So bad that I meet this guy. This is an important part of my story. Growing up in the barrio, violence is a go-to for everything. You hurt my feelings, I'm going to hurt you. There's always someone bigger. The first time I ever got my ass kicked was in second grade. I pushed this boy and he busted his head open on the water fountain because we have them everywhere in California. It's hot. And his sisters from the junior high came over the next day. His name was Fernando. They came over from Pacoima Junior High and they kicked my ass at the handball court on the way home from school. And I get home and I am like, I'm messed up, right? And my dad's like, well, what happened? I'm like, I had my ass kicked. And he's like, did you fight back? Did you win? And I was like, no, look at me. What makes you think I won? And I got my ass whooped that night. And he said, you don't need to start it, but you will always fucking finish it. And where we grew up, there are two type of people. They're the type of people that ran home, like my little sister, or they're the type of people that would square up to anybody and anything. And I was the square up kind. Well, once my addiction, I mean, this, like, my mom sent me back from Michigan. So I'm already a violent, short-tempered, unable to process emotions whatsoever person. And now I find drugs and alcohol, you know, and it doesn't help. Doesn't help at all. And but I know I have a problem at this point. I know I have a problem. And I didn't think drinking or weed was a problem. But definitely meth's a problem, right? Like, I'm doing acid, like we're going to like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I am doing so much acid that I'm like dropping 5 or 6 tabs to equal one. Me and I call him my brother, and like I can't do anything, nothing. I have never been able to do anything non-addictively. And so, but I realize I have a problem and I meet this guy and he's like, fuck tweakers, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I love you. You know, can you get me sober? And he was adamant. You could be a drunk. You could fucking smoke weed. You can do whatever the fuck you want, but you ain't going to tweak around me. And I was really young. He was really young. He was a gigolo. I ended up staying with him on and off for a decade of my life. He slept with all of my friends. He is a severe alcoholic still to this day. I mean, I learned how to drink with this man. I mean, we're like wild turkey. I mean, it had to be hard and it had to be a lot. But I still felt like I was better than when I was tweaking, right? I got some weight on me. I'm doing pretty good. Got a job, got our own apartment. You know, who cares if the cops are knocking on the door for fighting every night? I mean, who cares about any of that? And then I find out he slept with somebody and then I get mad and I'd leave. And then I would, you know, just throw my life away in one sweep. I'd quit my job, do whatever. And I'd go back to knowing what I do, which is hustle. So, you know, I know how to hustle and I can make money fast on hustling. And all those people that have been waiting for me to talk to them are right there ready to give me their money. So we do this dance back and forth and I end up pregnant. I mean, I don't understand why. I was such a, you know, good girl. You know, those drunken nights, I was perfectly capable of doing protection and all that stuff, like wonderfully capable of it. But no, I end up knocking up, you know, and so we have this little baby boy and his name is Warren. And my grandparents are dying. And so my grandma calls me and says, I haven't talked to your dad in almost the whole time we've been in South Carolina, but by then it's been like 5 years, you know? And I need him to come out here. I need you to go watch his house. We need your father. So I go to my dad's and I'm like, this is what grandma said. Cause I talked to my grandma the whole time I ran away. No matter what the condition was, I always called my grandma. And she was so loving. She reminds me of your mom, actually. Well, she's just unconditional love. And I don't know that I've ever known that since. And that is what I try to emulate. And I fail miserably because that unconditional love that you get like that is, it's something special. And if you haven't experienced that in your life, I apologize, because someone that loves you through your good times and your bad times without bossiness and rah, 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 which is what I do because I'm an asshole, it saved my life. Anyways, so I went to my dad's and me and Dayton at this point got into a big old row. And so I'm living at my dad's, and he, like, the lights go off. Like, he's still doing his shit, you know? He's doing his thing, except he has no girls there no more. So people are stopping by and stuff. Now I have a kid, okay? Dayton is off doing whatever Dayton's doing. I'm at my dad's house. He's got his buddies coming over, and I'm like, I need money. The lights got turned off. I just threw my life away again. And before you know it, I am like sitting there with a 6-month-old kid, and I am 95 pounds again. If you know me, I am 200 pounds no matter what. I'm either a 200 pounds fit, which looks good, or I'm a 200 pounds fat, which is comfy, right? So who cares? But I'm 200 pounds. That's what my body likes. So to be down in the 90s is scary, really fast. And my dad comes home, and he has his grandson in the house who he doesn't know. He just spent 6 months with his parents, who he hasn't talked to in 5 years. And he's going to get his shit together. My dad's going to get sober. I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? As I'm like getting high, having the roller coaster, people coming in and out. My dad had this bat, and he called it the Peacemaker. And he fucking took that bat off the shelf and would fucking hit the wall. And he was like, get the fuck out of my house right now. All right. So, you know, sell a bunch of stuff. I got an RV, and I'm living in an RV with a fucking baby. Doing my thing. So I'm doing a dope deal. And I look outside, and my son is taking a shit in the middle of the sidewalk. And at that fucking moment, that moment is it. I call his dad, and I was like, I need help. Like, this is what just happened. Like, this is not okay. I don't know how I didn't see it before, but this is why, if you ever hear me say, my son saved my life. My first son saved my life. Unfortunately for him, he lived through it, and he has to deal with the repercussions of it. And all I try to do is be the best example, but my son saved my life. And so I move out of LA, and I go to Temecula, because that is the answer. And I go to Temecula, and I find out that my sister's back in town, because he had a friend had called and said, oh, well, your sister's back in town. No, my sister lives in Michigan. None of you guys know her. None of you guys know her. Why would you say that? Do you know? Well, we saw Dayton and your sister at a party last night. Well, I know what kind of guy Dayton is. And why would he meet my sister and never tell me after we've been together all these years? So we get in a fight. I knock him out, per quo, right? And then he gets up, and he tackles me. And when he tackles me, we land on my son, and my son breaks his leg. And this is a severe moment for me. A severe moment for me. First of all, for a long time, it was all his fault. A lot of things happened between then and there. That was the end of that relationship. I got into another relationship. I'm out of time, so I'm kind of going to rush through the end part of it. But I blamed him, you know, for a good part of my life on this situation. And I'm really young, you know, at this point, I'm like 20. I'm 21, maybe. And I blamed him forever. A bunch of stuff happened, and some court things were filed because they thought he had hurt my son. And so they thought I was lying for him. So they picked us up, and we did some time in Riverside County Jail. And I would never say he did it, because that wasn't true. Do you know? But there was a lot, like a lot that happened in the manner, like, I hate him, do you know? And so finally they're just like, just get the fuck out of jail, after doing it a significant amount of time. And then I go to try to fight for my son and get my son back. And that has its ups and downs, you know, like I'm doing good. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, do this, 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 this. And then you're not good enough anymore, you know? And so I go back and forth between being sober to go back to drinking and smoking weed. Actually, my PO came over at like 9 o'clock in the morning. I've got like a plate full of weed that I'm de-seeding because I'm a good drug dealer. So I'm taking out the seeds before I sell it to you, you know? And I've got a bottle of alcohol. I am drunk as fuck. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. So I throw the bong and the weed and everything behind the couch, right? And then he comes in and it smells like bong water. I mean, I'm talking about one of the, you know, this is a long time ago. So it was a big bong for the day. Do you know? It was a good 4 footer, bong water everywhere, weed everywhere. And he comes in, I was like, it's my birthday. Like, he doesn't know my fucking birthday, right? Like, he doesn't have it on his fucking paperwork. It's my birthday. Would you like a drink? Do you want to celebrate with me? So he orders me to go to rehab. So I go to rehab. They kick me out of rehab. It's a 90-day program of rehab. And they kicked me out on day 89 because I had to go like to the dentist or something. And someone offered me a joint because you attract what you are, right? And I was like, yeah, let me have that. And then I got back and I felt guilty about it. And so I told them and they're like, you got to go. Come back in 90 days. Let's do a reset. 90 days reset. That 90 days I drank every fucking day. Every fucking day that I was out. And then I went back and I graduated it, you know, and this time, instead of getting my shit together or like doing what I've always done, I actually went to a homeless shelter. I went to a homeless shelter. I went to a temporary agency. I got a job. I got a place. And, you know, before long, I'm smoking weed again and I'm drinking again. This goes on for some time. I get into another relationship. For some reason, I end up in Evanston, Wyoming. Like, you're talking an LA chick to Evanston, Wyoming. Okay. I'm offensive to everybody if you know me. So now imagine like honky tonk fucking land and like LA chick. Like they, like I'm button heads and I'm drinking, right? I am so thankful for this town because I couldn't get lost here. Everyone saw me. If I went out, you were talked about when you walked into the grocery store. People were whispering behind your backs. Literally, I came here. I got pregnant right away with my last son. I was pregnant for 9 months. You know, I breastfed for a few months. I was doing so good. And then the second I stopped breastfeeding, within 6 months, I was sober. That's how fast it happened because I couldn't get lost in the small town. And I'm so fucking thankful for it. Because every time I've always thought it was the hard drugs or it was this or it was that, you know? But the truth is I've been an alcoholic and an addict from the very fucking beginning. And it takes what it takes. And I'm so thankful too that I'm one of these people that have a story that started young. I can't imagine with my personality and I'm born an addict. I'm born an alcoholic. I wasn't one that used it and abused it and I could party here and there. I never could. It's genetically involved in me. I mean, I'm a gym goer. If you know me, I'm like records, gym, you know, like I whatever I do addictively, including working, do you know? But I choose to pick healthy addictive things. But my problem in life until I got to AA this last time was acknowledging I had to give up everything. I mean, does it hurt my feelings that I think that I can't retire and smoke a joint? Absolutely. But is that joint worth going back to whoever I once was? And what's the probability of that happening? The probability is high. I have fought addiction my whole life. And so since I'm a boxer and I grew up with all this violence, I look at it like fighting. I have like gone to battle. I've gone to battle. Like I've gone head to head. I've gone head to head with every substance I've ever used. And it always fucking won. It always won. Like at some point, what do you say? Like uncle, fucking uncle. Like, would I want to smoke a joint when I retire? Fuck yeah. But uncle, like it's not worth it. Like it, nothing is worth it anymore because I am a better human being than I was even before my addiction. I am not the sister that would cut off her Barbie's head and I literally hang him over her fucking bed and like torture her with it. I'm not that person. I'm not that person that would just fucking go and jam somebody up for money. I'm not the person that beat up hookers that worked hard for their money and jacked them for their money. You know, I am not the person that burned bridges left and right and gave no fucks about it. You know, to me, every relationship that I have is valuable, and there's nothing that I would do to give it up. And the hardest thing I have today, after so long of sobriety, is to remembering I'm not perfect, and to give myself a break when I fall short of my own expectations. Because I did not become Mary Poppins because I got sober. I did not fucking become someone amazing. I just became the best version of me. And that's all I can be. And is the best version of me fall short of what your idea of me is? Maybe. But that's not my problem. That's your problem. I can only be the best version of me. I can't be Mary Poppins. I can't be, you know, woman next door that you idolize. I am me. And I try to live as honestly and as true to my own self and soul and know what that is. Today, I'm comfortable in my own skin. Today, I am just so blessed. And I have none of this. I don't have the house. I don't have the kids. I don't have a husband. I don't have a job. I don't have I have two very, very close friends, and I don't even have them. I have none of it if I'm not sober. I have none of it if I decide to give it up today. And so today I'm going to stay in the middle of the path. I'm going to keep doing what I've been doing for the last 15 years, and I'm going to stay sober today. And then tomorrow I'm going to pick up and I'm going to do the same exact thing. So that way I can guarantee that how much I've grown, how much God has blessed my life, and everything that I have earned and love about myself from AA that I get to keep. And if I lose the house today, that's okay. God will figure something out. You know, if I lose the car, but it's the fact that I know I can, and I don't have to go deal drugs. I don't have to go get drunk. I don't have to compromise who I am today for any of it. I can still just be the best version of me. Nobody else. Just me for today. And with that, I will take another grateful 24. And thanks for letting me share.
Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you, Marsha. I love you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can hear a lot of the parallels. Like it's clear to see that there is a reason why I identified with her story so much.
Yeah. Dude, and like, she's mellowed out a lot now, but Evanston is a hick town. Okay. Like, she did not fucking belong there.
Right.
It was as shocking for the town, I'm sure, as it was for her, you know, like, just different cultures. And for her to be where she's at now, it's awesome to watch. I can't be around her without being happy. You know, she just makes everybody feel good. And, you know, we love her so much. She's helped out my family immensely, you know, working with my sister and stuff. And so get that out of the way. And now we can talk about
great.
All the other stuff.
I think
moments of clarity.
There was a lot of stuff happening in her childhood, you know, which I appreciate her sharing, because, and the one thing that she said that I think happens to a lot of us is, you know, I didn't know it was so different. I didn't know that we were different until, you know, I get to this certain point. And it's almost like that's a moment of clarity too, right? Like, you're able to see, like, holy shit, the whole world doesn't live this way.
Yeah.
Like, my life, my family is so different than from what is quote unquote normal or typical.
Yeah. You know?
And I don't know. I think it's we hear that a lot, man.
Yeah.
We hear that a lot. And I think that you know, like, childhood trauma is a real thing.
Yeah.
And
being a parent, it makes you wonder, like, how can I make sure that my child knows that they're okay? Like, you know, doing this podcast, one of the things that I take away from it is, like, you know, from stories like hers and other people's, is like, how do I pass this on to my kids to know that, you know, you're great. You're uncomfortable. Yes. But that's normal to be uncomfortable in your skin. You don't need to destroy your life because of it. And, you know, one of the things I remember about being a kid is, the first time that I ever saw any type of powder drug was my dad's, you know? And I told my sister Chris about it, and I'm not sure what happened to it, but it kind of because of DARE also.
Interesting.
You know, like that's so whole cool thing. And so, yeah.
It's so funny that you both have stories of DARE, and then you both, like, pretty soon afterwards ran into like an actual incident where you were like, oh, this is what they were talking
yeah
about. Because I had DARE and I didn't see shit till,
like, that's because you had a normal childhood.
Another, you know, like 12 or 13 years. But it's funny. Like, let me ask you this. Like, when she talked about dumping that mountain of powder in the garbage, was there any reaction in you?
Yeah, I remember when I told my sister, and then I found out that she talked to my dad about it. I was freaked out. I was fucking like, oh God, my dad's gonna kill me. And he never said anything to me about it.
Wait, you're saying that Marcia did that to your dad's
stuff? No.
Oh,
okay. When I was a kid, I was going through my dad's shit,
right,
and I found a paper fold with some crank in it, and I thought it was cocaine. And so I told my sister, Chris, I was like, dad's got cocaine.
Yeah.
And then she talked to him. And then I found out that my sister, Chris, talked to my dad about it, because he came and he told me that it was crank. And I'd never heard of crank before that. And it kind of like eased my, he was like, oh, I do crank to drive truck. You know, he's like covering his ass, because my dad was an alcoholic too.
Right.
And it made me feel a little better about it, because I didn't know that crank was just as bad as coke. Right. Yeah. They didn't tell you that stuff. But when I found out that he knew that I was going through his shit and found his drugs, right, I thought he was going to kill me, you know? And, You don't fuck with the guy's drugs, you know.
Well, I mean, that, like, when I heard her share that in her story about how she found that powder of, and then she threw it in the trash, I literally, like, there was something inside of me that was like, oh, you did it.
Yeah, so, right? Like, oh no.
There's still that connection of like, you did fucking not. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's unbelievable, you know,
the attachment that we have to that lifestyle.
And yet, like, good for her, you know,
at the same time.
Like, I try and put myself in that situation of like, fuck, what would I do if my kid did that? Like, it might be like a moment of clarity for me, where it's like, oh my God, like, he knows what it is. And she threw it away.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows? Like, she talked about, you know, that being a catalyst in the breakup of her dad and his brother. And who knows how God worked in that relationship because of that, like what, how more devastating it could have been if those drugs didn't get thrown away and that relationship did it, you know? And like, I try to go down that road now, like, what good came out of those kinds of things, you know? Like, obviously, like what happened with her kid taking a shit outside, that was something that kickstarted like seeing that realization of how dysfunctional she's being, kickstarted this whole, you know, this whole new way of thinking that led her to where she's at today, you know. And then, you know, him getting his leg broken and, you know, all the things that led up to what it led up to, you know, how different our lives would be without those things that happened it's immeasurable to say, like, you know, if we didn't take a left instead of a right that day or whatever, would we even be here? And what work we have in front of us to do because of the things that happened that made us start thinking in a different way. It's hard to say, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. But I too was kind of, no.
Well, I really like hearing how grateful she is for the life she has today, and how, you know, she wouldn't give it up for anything.
Yeah. And it illuminates off of her. We had the opportunity to go to a concert this summer. That's why I'm wearing this hat. We went to this Pantera show together.
Okay.
And, you know, just that energy that she brings, you know, she was a fighter and she continues to be a fighter, but for the good,
mm-hmm,
right? And I feel like all of us are kind of like that a little bit. You know, we all have that fight in us to do the next right thing now instead of destroying the world around it, tearing the head off of our sister's dolls, shit like that.
Right. Yeah. It definitely takes some doing. And I appreciate that she's out there doing it.
She's a big staple in the recovery community up there. And, you know, I think a lot of people get a lot out of her just being there, being at the meetings, being in, you know, carrying the message, having some place for people to go and get sober and get started and sharing her experience, that stuff.
Well, awesome. I'm certainly glad that she shared it with us.
I am too.
Yeah.
I am too.
I appreciate you getting it, you know?
Yeah, I love getting these stories.
You're so lucky.
Yeah, I love getting these stories.
Well, dude, that was a good show.
Yeah.
You feel good about that?
I do.
You want a high five? Can't reach now. Too far away. All right. That felt good.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, I'll get one later.
J-Town, thank you.
Who's J-Town?
He's the guy back there.
Oh. I call him J-Town. You can't call him J-Town. J-Town, thank you. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you, Cameron. Yeah. Thank you, Marsha. Thank you, Stay Stop. Thank you, Valor. Thank you, Brainwash. Thank you, everyone that's listening.
Yeah.
It's hard to say goodbye, but we're going to.
We got to. Yeah. Let's get out of here, man. And with that, remember, you are worth the work.
We'll see you on the other side.